because it would pay out something. So yes, it had a life cover element. So you had a living fund, and then you had a you know, a death fund. But as Ricky said, you know, it was a little bit complex. But I've been banging on about the fact that I think insurers should be looking at the similar concept for a very long time. And Ricky and I are also supporters of Zurich's IP and critical illness hybrid products. We see Ricky's nodding his head. We probably talked about it more than people at Zurich did, because actually it was a really good option. It was something that if you suffered a critical illness, it would pay out. But if you didn't, the income protection would kick in. So it was a cheaper option because you'd only have one payout, but it would actually enable people to have that protection in place. And unfortunately, that product was withdrawn. A lot of these things, it's all chicken and egg. You know, people don't sell it, so then the insurers don't invest in it. And then because the insurers don't invest in it and market it properly, people don't sell it. And that's a real shame for me. Hopefully that's helped.
Thanks, Emma. I do think quite often innovation can be restricted because it doesn't fit into a box, and it cannot be compared easily, or it compliance struggle because you've got to justify why you're going for that as opposed to something else. And that can potentially can be restrictive on innovation. And I think the points you've made there kind of almost bear that out. Right, so I'm going to move on now and go to Zoe, who I can see in the middle of my screen now. Good afternoon, Zoe.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Thank you, Adam. So, yes, my wish, it would really be to have a big overhaul on underwriting, everything from the philosophies and the process. We've already spoken today about sort of GP reports and the issues that they cause for us, but also being able to speak with underwriters as well about decisions and why, because the more we can understand about, you know, why a decision has been made, we can then better understand how to help that client, you know, where maybe best to place them, or if they can't be helped now, when they may be able to be helped in the future. So it's having that sort of dialogue afterwards as well, definitely. Also, we've spoken about, you know, the length in underwriting. So, yes, some providers may offer mortgage-free cover. You know, we have underwrite later. But again, we spoke about clients that may have a postponement whilst they're awaiting for something or tests. You know, can we not give clients a certain level of cover during that period? Because, you know, with the waiting times that we have now, you know, we're leaving clients without any cover, you know, whatsoever. And also around exclusions, I really want to see more providers doing reviewable exclusions. And, you know, if we get to a situation where if a client was to take out a new policy, they actually wouldn't have that exclusion. Why can't we have that exclusion removed? You know, sometimes I have a situation with a client where they've had a diagnosis, and because that diagnosis was within 6 to 12 months, they have a rating. If it would have been 12 months ago, it would be standard terms. So, you know, the client needs the cover now. Does that then mean we have to reapply for cover? Why can't that rating be removed in 12 months if that condition has still been stable? You know, again, smoking, you know, certain insurers will, you know, reduce the rating if clients stop smoking for 12 months. Why can't more clients do that? And why can't we do that with more situations with regards to exclusions and ratings to better serve clients? And also, you know, clients often have the misconception that insurers will try to get out of paying. Well, if we can say to them, look, you may have an exclusion now, but actually in 12 months time, this provider would be willing to remove that exclusion for you. So I just think we can give, you know, much better outcomes, definitely for clients. And it would also make our jobs a lot easier as well.
Thanks, Zoe. And I'm sure a lot of people have been nodding their heads vigorously as you've been talking there, particularly with regard to the exclusions. I know that point came up at least a good few times at Protection Review last week. So I think you're going to get a lot of support behind what you're asking for there. I'm going to now move on to Stacey from Association of Mortgage Intermediaries, who's going to come in and give her view for 2023. Stacey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for having me on this call today. So my one wish for the protection industry for next year is for when AMI carries out its viewpoint research again, we start to see a positive shift in consumer perceptions, even if it is just a small shift, and that's a step in the right direction, particularly around consumer mistrust of claim stats, mistrust around advisors' motivations. I'd mentioned at last month's forum that these were trends that were reoccurring. We've seen them over the last 3 years. So I really think that they're areas that we need to kind of tackle quite urgently, first of all. And I've been thinking, how can we try and tackle some of these areas? And it links back to what a lot of you have been talking about today about real life stories. I think they're so important, and I'd love to see even more of those, because I think if we're doing that in conjunction with claim stats, that should help build trust. So it's not just about the figures, it's about the actual feelings of people. And it was great to hear Sean from the Exeter speak about involving advisors in those case studies. So I think that's really powerful too. And again, I feel like I'm just echoing other people's comments, but Scott also mentioned about broadening case studies, which I think is a fab idea too. And let's talk to more people, not just those that have had a claim, but let's talk to people who have insurance. What are their motivators? What's their reason for taking out the cover? I think the more we can talk about that and the more people see that, they might think, ah, okay, This feels like more people are getting this. Am I actually in the minority? So there's a bit of psychology there. And then again, Scott's comment about additional benefits, case studies on that. I think just the more we can get out there, the better. And then turning to trying to tackle this challenge of mistrust around the advisor's motivations, I think mortgage advice firms in particular need to be shouting more about the value of protection advice and make sure they're not selling themselves short when it comes to that, that it needs to be seen as a vital part of the mortgage process. So I think, yes, yeah, so some firms, if you've got a customer that's got their house at the end of the day, it's very clear to them what the value of that advice, but I don't think we're necessarily shouting about it enough on the protection space. And then just my last point is just on the consumer duty, because I think that will help to tackle some of the barriers that we found in our viewpoint research, particularly in the area of communication, where our community group research showed that there was a lot of strong views around jargon. And for me, it just showed how important it is for advisors to help break down what can be complex concepts. And it was great to see there was a couple of presentations at ProtectX last week on this topic, Robin being one of those. So I think there's a lot more that we can do in that area. And then just lastly, I've been talking to some advice firms who are really keen to hear from insurers about the work that they're doing as part of consumer duty. They're really interested to hear about what changes might be coming. So I think the more insurers can share on that, the better. That's me done.
Thanks, Stacey. And I think everyone on this call will echo your wish of improvements in consumer perception in next year's viewpoint. And we'll obviously all be pushing to try and improve those views of the industry. I'm just going to go through the chat has been going a bit mental. So apologies, I'm not going to be able to come to everyone that has thrown in a wish or been part of the conversation there. But I've just picked out a few people that I'm going to pick on, if I may, just in the remaining 5 minutes we've got, just explain the wish they've put in there in a bit more detail. So the first person I'm going to come to is Robin, because you were quite cryptic in terms of, well, I say cryptic, I can probably guess what you're going to say, but more common sense. Do you want to elaborate?
Oh, but it's just with everything, is it? I think everything we've spoke about at some point, whenever there's something that we're like, this process doesn't make sense, we're like, well, actually common sense would make that easier. And I think especially in this industry, we get very caught up in the shoulds and the compliance and terrified of regulators, that sometimes I think we just need to strip this back and go, right, what does the process need to look like for the consumers? Richard's just popped into the chat about, do we talk about claim stats as advisors? And I've openly said no, because do insurers understand when we are having to go through our recommendation how much we have to go through? Do you understand what it's like to read through your brochures to explain them to clients 2-3 times a day? Do you understand how easy or not easy they are to navigate? When you all use different subheadings, different colours, different fonts, different, like everything, just, I think that would be very eye-opening if actually some insurers turned people out on the ground to go and spend time with advisors and go, right, which is your favourite policy summary to go through? And they then go and look at that one and find out why we like it and why we might not like theirs. It's common sense with everything. Thanks, Sarah.
There's a challenge. Any insurers that want to put people out and shadow Robin, I'm sure she won't mind for a few days. I'm going to go across to Lee Thomas, who has put his usual business protection slant on his wish for 2023. Lee, I haven't seen you. There you are. Oh, we can't hear you. Got about 4 different microphones on there, Lee. Would pick one. I'll come back to you, Lee. I'm going to go to Settle, who has also put something in.
Yeah,
I'll try to come back to you.
That's right. My one's really simple. And it's one I've been thinking about for a while. Think about every advisor who engages and puts down beneficiaries and so on and so forth. But actually, the world has changed. People change relationships. People are no longer alive if they put their grandparents or parents or children and so on and so forth. And it's just revisiting it, because we think about the story, and it brought home last week at the Protection Review about the individual where the payout could only be paid to the individual whose girlfriend from 6 years ago was listed down. That should not be a conversation that the insurer or the advisor ever needs to have. And how many of the advisor's policies will have had a beneficiary change for all the right reasons? And if we just reduce one conversation, that doesn't need to take place. Brilliant. And the consequential benefits? Well, actually, we all know the more beneficiaries you talk to about their role, then actually that can trigger a new business conversation, or at least something that links families together a little bit more. We all know that actually some people get really busy with advising and want to put something in trust and want to get the paperwork out, but the client never responded and moved on to something else and then actually hasn't been chased. Close a few of those loopholes, close a few of those scenarios too. So it's a simple one, but I think what providers will need to help with in some circumstances, especially those without CRMs and so on and so forth, who are the noted beneficiaries, where is the paperwork? Because I'm not convinced everybody will have the trust paperwork with them or the noted down the names of the beneficiaries.
Thanks, Settle. And lastly, Lee, I'll give you the opportunity to be the last person if you want to be, just as my doorbell's going. No, I'm gonna effectively talk through. I heard that, Lee. What Lee's asking for is effectively a life and permanent incapacity, or TPD, shareholder protection plan, effectively. And we've had this conversation before, but Lee's point there is the vast list of critical illnesses for businesses often aren't going to take that key person or shareholder out of the business. And he wants a plan that's going to cover those things that are going to take them out of the business, thus the TPD element. So Lee, I apologize if I got that wrong, but I think that's the gist of what you're saying there. On that note, we have reached the 1:30 mark and the end of the session. I'd like to take this opportunity to just thank everyone that came on. So Aviva, the Exeter Legal and General, and all of the advisors that gave us your views. It's going to be quite interesting writing this up and transcribing particularly that chat, because there's a lot in there, but we will go through that. We will come out with a piece which is advisors' wishes for 2023, and we'll look to get as many of those in there as possible. I'll wrap up there, and I guess there's nothing else for me to say, but we hope you all have a very merry Christmas, happy holidays, and we all look forward to seeing you all again in the new year.